Here's to the crazy ones, the misfits, the rebels, the troublemakers, the round pegs in the square holes, the ones who see things differently. They're not fond of rules, and they have no respect for the status quo. You can quote them, disagree with them, glorify or vilify them. About the only thing you can't do is ignore them. Because they change things. They push the human race forward. And while some may see them as the crazy ones, we see genius. Because the people who are crazy enough to think they can change the world are the ones who do.
Why do we start off this week's show with an old Apple ad? Because when I look at what Jacqueline Novogratz has done and what she'll do, you can't help but think she's just a little bit crazy. But you also have to see the genius in what she does. That's where she belongs, among the many people who've come before her, who have dared to change the world in the face of great odds, and in a world that's allergic to change. In The Blue Sweater, we follow Jacqueline on her journey from an idealistic 20-something out to change the world, who's learned some very hard lessons along the way, to a true world changer who's making her dent in the universe. Speaking of crazy geniuses, this week's book was sent to me to review by two people I admire greatly. Seth Godin, a best-selling author who also blogs at sethgodin.typepad.com, and Sasha Dichter, who works with Jacqueline at the Acumen Fund, and who also blogs at sashadichter.wordpress.com. Thank you both for sending me the book and for continuing to be an inspiration to me. And first, a little bit about the story. This book is a pure delight, both from a lessons learned standpoint, but also for the ride we get taken on. We'll get to the lessons learned in a couple of minutes, but first I need to give you a quick recap of her story so we can put all of that in context. The book starts out in the concrete jungle of New York City, where Jacqueline starts her career as an international banker at Chase Manhattan. In her first year, she spent some time in Brazil auditing businesses there. That was the first time she caught a glimpse of the real divide between the rich and the poor. After being thwarted by her attempts to start up a microfinance arm at Chase Manhattan to deal with that, she joins a nonprofit women's group involved in microenterprise and was swiftly sent away to Africa to start her life's work. She arrives to find that making change in the world is a lot easier in your mind. She gets her start in Nairobi, where things are a miserable failure if we're keeping score in the making change department. Next, she has a stint in Rwanda, where things actually start to pick up steam. There, she founds an organization called Duterembere, and I have no idea how to pronounce that, which focused on microcredit for women. She later takes a stint at the World Bank, where she learns many of the reasons that aid missions rarely work. And finally, after getting her MBA at the Stanford Graduate School of Business and then working at the Rockefeller Foundation, she finally branches out on her own with a vision to eradicate poverty. The reason this book is called The Blue Sweater is because Novogratz, in her childhood, owned a blue sweater that she eventually gave to the Goodwill. And through her journeys in Africa, she shockingly finds an African child wearing that exact same sweater. Not one like hers, but the exact same one with her name tag attached. That is amazing. This book isn't written as a self-help book or a business book, but I think it has a lot to do with anybody who's trying to make change. And here are four lessons that I took away. And quickly as a side note before we get into that, there's absolutely no way for me to do any of her story justice because of the richness and the color that summarizing a life has to suck out in order to get it in a condensed form. So please, please, please go read the book. Okay, lesson number one, which is to start. We often find ourselves waiting for the exact right time to do something, especially when it's something big. I know I'm guilty of that. Here's some advice that Jacqueline got right before she started her work at the Acumen Fund, keeping in mind that she'd spent a number of years over in Africa before this. Don't wait for perfection. Just start and let the work teach you. No one expects you to get it right in the very beginning, and you'll learn more from your mistakes than you will from your early successes anyways. So stop worrying so much and just look at your best bets and go. And that's such great advice. And here's the thing. When we're young, we usually don't have a problem with this. Jacqueline didn't. When she was in her 20s, she just decided that she was going to give up a plush position at a large bank to go help change the world. She didn't know exactly how she wanted to do it. She just started. And it seems that as we get older in life, life starts to beat us up a little bit and you start questioning things and you realize that it isn't as easy as you might have thought. So you wait and you think and you wait some more until finally you realize that there's only one truth that you have to get over. You never get there if you don't take the first step. And here, back again, is our friend Seth Godin with a couple of words for you on that.
So I'd like you to do something for me, and I hope you'll think about it before you reject it out of hand. What I want you to do, it only takes 24 hours, is create a movement. Something that matters. Start. Do it. We need it. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thank you.
And that brings us to the second lesson, which is wicked problems aren't easy. You come to realize pretty quickly that if you're doing something worthwhile or trying to solve what some people would call a wicked problem, you're gonna have a tough time. Here are just a couple of the things that Jacqueline had to deal with when she first arrived in Africa. After being warned that some of the people she was there to help wanted to poison her, she mysteriously came down with food poisoning. Weeks of accounting work she had prepared for a foundation was destroyed because she highlighted some areas that needed to be improved upon. This highlights an important point about doing something worthwhile. Most times, your biggest challenges are the ones you never could have imagined before the journey started. It's the side issues that nobody told you about. It's the red tape you need to navigate through. It's all the little things that, when you add them up, start to look an awful lot like giant roadblocks. But when you look at the solutions to almost all of these challenges you might be facing, it all comes down to the next lesson I took away from this book, that it's all about the people. Lesson number 3 is understanding people and culture. Why were the people in Africa giving Jacqueline such a hard time when all she was there to do was to help? She and the other people who sent her didn't understand the people or the culture there. That's why. And here's just a few of the examples to illustrate that point. UNICEF once hired an expensive Italian designer to create a poster campaign aimed at convincing women to vaccinate their children, with simple written messages accompanied by gorgeous photographs. And they were perfect, except for the small fact that there was an extremely low female literacy rate in Rwanda. Big oops. And that's a pretty obvious blunder, I think. But how do we know when it's safe to confidently make assumptions about the people we need to touch, move, and inspire? Well, consider this story. Malaria is pretty much a big deal in Africa. It kills millions every year. An easy and inexpensive way to fight this issue is through the use of mosquito nets. And leaving the issue of whether or not they should be bought or sold aside, in one area, they are bought and sold in something that looks an awful lot like a Tupperware party. The neighborhood gets together for a demonstration and then has a little chit-chat and decides whether or not they're going to buy the nets. And here's how one of the most successful people in the groups sold the nets. And I quote, "You put the bed on the floor and all the bugs go away. You can sleep the whole night long. The color is beautiful. And you can hang the nets in your windows so that your neighbors know how much you care about your family." Malaria is kind of mentioned as an afterthought. And so there you have it. It's beauty, vanity, status, and comfort. I would have easily jumped to the health issue, and I'm betting you would have as well. You would have to keep everybody safe, and nobody wants to get malaria, and nobody should die. But you and I don't understand the culture and the people of Africa very well, do we? And whether or not you're running a business or a nonprofit, think about this for a second. What assumptions are you making about your stakeholders, your donors, your customers, your clients, that you really shouldn't be taking for granted? And this leads us to the last point, the last lesson. The solution lies in simplicity on the far side of complexity. Oliver Wendell Holmes once said that I would not give a fig for the simplicity on this side of complexity, but I would give my life for simplicity on the other side of complexity. When you make your start, wrestle with the issues that you never expected to wrestle with, and truly understand the people and the culture surrounding the problem you're trying to solve, you eventually get to simplicity on the far side of complexity. This is where your journey will lead you. The simplicity often comes in the form of a third alternative to two seemingly conflicting ideas. For Jacqueline, the issue became more and more clear as time went on. Charity alone wasn't the answer. The market alone wasn't the answer. And here's none other than Jacqueline herself to describe where she finally ended up.
I want to end just by saying that there's enormous opportunity to make poverty history. To do it right, we have to build business models that matter, that are scalable, and that work with Africans, Indians, people all over the developing world who fit in this category to do it themselves. Because at the end of the day, it's about engagement, it's about understanding that people really don't want handouts, but they want to make their own decisions, they want to solve their own problems, and that by engaging with them, not only do we create much more dignity for them, but for us as well. And so I urge all of you to think next time as to how to engage with this notion and this opportunity that we all have to make poverty history by really becoming part of the process and moving away from an us and them world and realizing that it's about all of us and the kind of world that we together want to live in and share. Thank you.
And on that note, I want to finish the show this week with a personal thank you to Jacqueline. The work that you're doing and the work that your team is doing is impacting millions across the globe, as you know, and I hope that you'll continue to lead us into the future.